Welcome to Creative Adversity, the podcast where we explore how entrepreneurial challenges form leaders and create business opportunities. I'm Sarah Malter, founder of Capitalize and Capitalize Technology, where we help innovative companies unlock funding. Over the last decade, I've been in the privileged position to witness the ups and downs of thousands of businesses and have been struck by the role adversity plays in creating standout leaders and life-changing business opportunities. I'm on a mission to transform the way leaders and entrepreneurs view perceived failures and instead get them to understand their true potential, that adversity can be the birthplace of innovation and creativity. It's only through immense pressure that diamonds are formed. In this podcast, we will hear stories from incredible leaders and entrepreneurs, learn how they overcame their challenges, and how to reframe adversity into opportunity. Welcome to Creative Adversity. On today's episode, we have Dr. Seppi Chakava. Seppi is the inventor of PixelChat, the first multi-user data communication platform with embedded live translation, and the CEO and founder of PixelR. Seppi, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. First of all, I'd love to hear a bit more about your journey to becoming a successful founder. So if you can tell us how you got to be where you are today, that would be great.
I'm originally Iranian. I was born in Iran. I came with my family to the UK. I studied here. I went to college. I did my undergraduate in electronic engineering. Then I did a PhD in astrophysics. 6 or 7 years, I used to work as an astronomer or experimental astrophysicist. That's what I did my PhD, creating computer imaging of Halley's Comet and the Giotto mission, which went through it. And then at the time, I realized that I'm pretty good at doing image processing and that sort of stuff. So I worked 3 years at Imperial College as a postdoc. And then I was offered a job at Max Planck Institute in Heidelberg to work as a scientist there. I went there for 3 years. Then I followed that by 2 years being at the University of Göttingen Observatory. To tell you the truth, I got a bit fed up working with astronomers. I just thought, you know, I really need to do something else. I was looking for a postdoc job, and I was recruited by Fraunhofer, sort of like, I think they're famous for inventing MP3, voice over IP, and many, many other things. The guy who recruited me, my boss, he said, well, you got a PhD in astrophysics, and you are an electronic engineer. So what we're going to do is we're going to give you a job. You're going to run the first internet in Eastern Europe by satellite. I had absolutely no idea what it was. I could say I built the first internet in Romania, Bulgaria, Slovak Republic, Lithuania, and two in Russia. And then because I used to work for Fraunhofer, it was we had to show at the end of each project, how do you present internet? So I said to them that, look, what we're going to do is we're going to show how it's possible to use internet to do e-learning. I mean, nobody knew about that. So we connected our network to some universities in Pennsylvania using ISDN at the time. And the guys in Pennsylvania, they were giving some lectures in business studies, and the partners in Eastern Europe, they were learning. And then, so to cut a long story short, I wrote the first virtual learning environment platform myself using HTML. So I stayed in Germany at Fraunhofer about 13 years. I had a very, very good team. We did a number of really amazing projects in our team. We built the first digital museum. Then we did also quite a bit in the area of edutainment, created the first multimedia home platform, which was the predecessor of the interactive television. One other thing that which I did, which, I mean, I'll talk about this because it's relevant to what I'm doing now. I created the first avatar for an interactive television, that we created this virtual reality TV presenter. We call it Marilyn. And Marilyn was connected to Yahoo Finance Center. And then she would read through the stock exchange from New York, London, Frankfurt, and Tokyo in different languages. And these were all live. In 2014, I set up the first online data science academy in the UK. And in 2017, I handed that over. I got a part-time job at the University of Oxford. That's where I'm now. I was teaching data science, software engineering, and AI. And then I set up my own startup company. Does that answer your question, Sarah?
Yeah, it does. It's incredible. And I have many questions on the heels of that as well. First and foremost, you've been involved with some tech that we now take for granted, but you were working on that 20 years ago. So what do you see as the next wave of technology? Where are we headed? And do you think then the lines between the analog and the digital world will fade so that it will blend from one into the other sort of seamlessly?
At the end of the day, I mean, you create this second life in the virtual world, but is it something that has got a purpose? Is it something that you can actually build on creating this virtual world, which would eventually solve our problems in the real world? That is the way to look at it. You know, you create something in a virtual world, absolutely, to benefit the real world as human beings. I mean, that is completely been demonstrated during the pandemic, because to harness the applications, the methodologies, the processes from the virtual world, it has enhanced our life and it helped us to get over the pandemic. It's not about something fuzzy. It's about really trying to harness outcome of the virtual world and then put it into real world in order to enhance our quality of life or our environment or whatever. I mean, this really brings me to what I have created. PixelChat is the next generation of data communication with embedded translation in it over 100 languages. So you can speak with anyone without knowing their language. This is a technology which is really built on the fact that if you have got something like the web that connect people and you've got social networks which connect people, people can only connect with each other if they have got the means to express themselves. You only can really truly socialize with people if you can express yourself in your own language, in your own culture, and there are no barriers. And that was really the motivation for me to create this PixelChat.
So tell me, what is something going on in the business right now that you're really excited about?
We have got potentially our first customers, which is good. Then we have got potentially some investment. I mean, we have had some sort of an offer.
Brilliant.
We are on the road, but then the thing is that because the technology is so matured, we are building a business around it. We're becoming much more comfortable with the processes. No, we are in a good place. We are really at the verge of distributing. I've just been talking to one of the world leading chip manufacturers. The technology that I'm using has been tested now as we speak with some telecom operators. And so I'm comfortable with it now. I mean, in terms of where the business going, where the interest is, and, you know, we got a lot of awards in the last 2 years. And actually, yesterday on one of the social media posting, one of the big video conferencing platform, somebody was talking about their new feature, which translate things locally. And one of my colleagues mentioned about this. And then he said, you know, I was expecting them to sort of delete the posting. But what they said, this is really interesting. We have got an area that you can offer your technology as an add-on to ours. So I think the penny is dropping, really.
So you mentioned that there have been difficult times. Were there times, whether it was in the business now or in the past, where you thought you weren't going to succeed?
I mean, throughout my life, more than anything, I think I have suffered because of who I am, my background, you know, all the prejudices. I'm not saying because I'm particularly a woman. It's my heritage, unfortunately, that has been singled out a bit because I've been Iranian and, you know, there's a lot of publicity. That has been sort of the biggest problem that I have had and disadvantage. And over again, I have gone through this process.
how did you get past it to be where you are today?
Because I'm a very positive person. I'm a very open person. And I have realized that at the end of the day is my perseverance. And if I'm doing something, I know that probably it's right. So I don't give up on that basis. When I look at, for example, my technology like PixelChat, I've taken 5 years to develop it. And I've got all this experience, knowledge. I put it in, you know, I had the vision. It's not something you do overnight. That's the reason it works. You get very disappointed. You go and show your technology to someone and, you know, it's just quite disheartening. And you have to sort of build a really thick skin.
And is that something you had to begin with, or did you develop it as you went through the process?
No, I mean, as an academic, you don't have that sort of thick skin. You think by default, because you have got certain credentials associated with your name. I remember somebody told me when I first got my PhD, and, you know, you just get the doctor title in front of my name. Somebody said to me, the only time I use that is when I go to see my my bank for increase my overdraft.
It's useful for something.
If you are all your life been an academic and you are, would it be doing your research, running the research labs or teaching or supervising students, you are well protected. You're well protected.
Obviously, you've gone from the world of academia to business. So how comfortable were you with the switch and with the idea of taking risks?
Actually, that's a very good question. I think the biggest risk I took was when I left my job at Fraunhofer. I had a very well-paid, secure job working for the German government. And when I said I want to give it up and I want to go to Britain, they just couldn't believe it. But then, I mean, in retrospect, I'm glad that I did it. Clearly, again, I have been extremely fortunate because of my partner was there to support me. My family was there to support me. And I have been very fortunate, actually, with the support I've been receiving from various different organizations.
So I firmly believe that most successes are built on learnings from things that have gone wrong, that failure is essential to success as long as you can learn from it. Are there any standout lessons that you've had in your life that define the success that you've had to date?
Yeah, I mean, this is very interesting because I strongly believe in that as well, Sarah. I think the other motto I've got is you can fail, but don't make the same mistake twice. So this is really has formed the fundamental part of my life. I mean, I can't, if I'm failing on something, I try to look at the positive. So you can fail as long as you don't fail on the same thing twice, because you have to have the experience. You have to understand. And it goes back to this learning and self-reflection. I try to make sure that the failures are happening at the smaller stage rather than you think about the big thing. If you fail on a big thing, you know, you're doing something wrong because you should have the failures done throughout the line.
Have you had any failures that have actually led to positive outcomes? The example I like to give is the creation of Post-it notes that was created because they were actually looking for an adhesive that wouldn't come off. And instead, they found one with different properties, and then you have Post-it notes.
I mean, one thing that I can say is that when I sort of like completely left my academic life in 2017, I was quite disappointed in many ways. But then, I mean, in retrospect, I think it was really the best thing that could happen to me at the time. And as you go through life, you know, you can see things which has happened. I wasn't selected there or, you know, for me, going through the failure, making a mistake once, that is a process.
Well, how comfortable with failure are you?
I'm pretty comfortable with it because I think nobody's perfect. But it really depends on the level of failure. I mean, you know, it really depends on the impact that it has got on you and yourself and on the others. That is how to measure it. Do you fail on fundamentals or principles that you believe in, if you betray your integrity, I think that is a huge thing.
That's very good. So I have one final question. It's a bit of a guilty pleasure question. I too have a background in astrophysics.
Oh, really?
I do.
Oh, fantastic. So what did you do where you work on?
So it was undergraduate. So it was mostly looking at dark matter, understanding formulas behind it, understanding
what... Oh, you are a cosmologist. I'm just a glorified technician. Yeah. Oh,
no. I like the theoretical stuff more than the actual... So here's my guilty pleasure question for you. What is your take on intelligent life outside of this solar system? Do you believe in it?
Well, I mean, it's a very interesting question. If you really think about it, coming back to the fundamentals, it's a question of the intelligence, isn't it? How do you define the intelligence? Even if it is a cell in our body, it's got intelligence. It's got its own DNA intelligence. And the core element of it is everywhere. I don't know, would it be a sort of like a piece of dust in the interstellar matter or whatever it is? It has got some sort of being, and it is subjected to the physical rules, physical laws, that it makes it evolve in certain way. And from my perspective, that is called intelligence. If you look at the definition of intelligence, it means doing things by through learning. So if you have got so by the creation itself, it's a form of intelligence in my eyes. And of course, I mean, I'm sure there are life in different forms. Would we have that type of combination of the intelligence that we people have got in this planet? Maybe not, but we got different forms of it. Does that answer your question?
It does. Seppi, thank you so much for joining us today on Creative Adversity.
Thank you very much, Sarah, for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast. If so, please subscribe below for more inspirational stories and lessons in creative adversity. Remember, the difference between setback and opportunity is only a matter of perception.